Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive, it is it's a new year. Happy New Year to everybody out there celebrating. Big appreciation for all of our sponsors. We get back to the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery very soon. I'll be letting myself play. I'll be telling you about our Nacho Mama's first appearance. But I was putting off the 2022 Maryland Crab Cake Tour from Thursdays to Fridays because I thought, well, the Ravens will be playing some playoff games here in January. I mean, they're 8-3. I better make some room in January to let myself play maybe on a trip to Foxborough or Kansas City or Buffalo or maybe some games here. Luke Jones joins us now to explain to us exactly how that might not be happening here this month. Luke, good morning. How are you? And certainly not a great start to the year for the Ravens here.
No, not a great start to the year and very much signaling what's likely to be starting to think about next year as it pertains to the football season. And look, I mean, you just mentioned it at 8-3. You kind of think about where the Ravens were at that point in time coming off of, you know, that Sunday night win against the Browns where Lamar throws four picks. It was another one of those wins where you and I were sitting here talking about, is this team really anywhere near as good as an 8-3 record, if we're being honest? And we had that conversation on a weekly basis, but hey, it's that old Bill Parcells line, right? You are what your record says you are. Well, the Ravens have lost five in a row since then. And at 8-8, the only thing they can point to at this point that even gives them a mathematical chance, although it's akin right now to flipping a coin and needing it to land on heads five or six times in a row. I mean, that's where they're standing with their odds. But that extra wild card does keep them mathematically alive technically. But as it pertains to realistically speaking, they're a footnote right now. And, you know, unless you think the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to beat Indianapolis or some of the other things, we'll get into that a little bit. But this team just hasn't been good enough in the month of December and now in early January. And as a result, they are barring a miracle as it pertains to the football sense of it. They're going to be sitting at home when teams start playing wild card weekend in a couple weekends.
When we start talking about this year, I guess in retrospect, and we've had 26 of them now to say which years were did we savor, which years were disappointing, which years could we have been better, which years did you overachieve, you know? This was one of those, the strangest of strange years because of the injury, because of the plague, because of the competitiveness of the division and watching Joe Burrow smoking cigars and the fall of the Steelers, which we'll judge for ourselves here this week in the final act of Ben Roethlisberger as well, and the disappointment of the Browns, but in the framework of the tapestry of Ravens history, five losses in a row, going winless in December after beginning the year. I mean, I remember the Redskins had a year where they were like 9-0 and didn't make the playoffs or something. There haven't been a whole lot of those, and certainly not around here. December implosions are not something that Billick or Harbaugh were famous for around here.
Well, I mean, you go back to 2007. And now that was more than December. I mean, that started kind of in October, right? I mean, they had a long, long losing streak and they lose the game to Miami, who that was their only win. And, you know, there was the thought that Billick's coming back and then he's not. And then they're looking for a new coach. But, you know, not that it's been as dire, as nightmarish as that was. And keep in mind, injuries were a big part of that when you can kind of remember what that secondary looked like.
Well, it's nightmarish in that he fired the coach. So, you know what I mean? It's the last time they fired a coach around here.
No, I meant that was nightmarish. I'm not saying I don't think this approaches that. We're not talking about John Harbaugh being fired here, nor should anybody, regardless of what you see on Facebook or anything like that. But it's disappointing. And I think what's going to be really challenging for the organization this offseason is trying to separate what you point to and chalk up due to injuries. And what do you say, all right, this is something we need to address? Because we can't just say it's 100% injuries, because you're not going to grow as an organization then. And Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh shouldn't view it and just chalk it up as, oh, we had a bunch of injuries, just run it back and everything's fine. I don't think they're going to do that, nor should they. But you want to react without overreacting. I mean, the reality is, there's not enough planning in the world. There's not enough cap dollars in the world. There aren't enough draft picks in the world to account for the number of injuries that they had in 2021. It's just extraordinary. Now, part of that is how much of that was rotten injury luck that inevitably is going to hit a team every so many years. You know, we think back to 2015. You know, we already mentioned 2007. You know, they've had some years where they were very successful despite injuries. 2012, they had, you know, a pretty big share of injuries if you're looking at it. 2008, they went to the AFC Championship game with a lot of injuries that year. But you need to look at that while also acknowledging, all right, do we need to look at our training staff? Do we need to look at our methods and how we do strength and conditioning? Is there something we're leaving out? Do we need to bring somebody in? Do we need to make some changes? I mean, those are all the things you need to do. So you don't want to overreact, but at the same time, you want to react where it's appropriate. And I think that's what's going to be the big challenge here because, yeah, you look at the end of the season and say, all right, Tyler Huntley played admirably, but he's no Lamar Jackson when we're talking about a Lamar who's healthy and playing at a high level. Now, clearly he hadn't been playing at a high level before the ankle, but go back to how he played the first half of the season. You know, they're not 8-3 without Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's obvious. So, you know, you have to make all those decisions. You have to evaluate everything. And I think when you do talk about a 5-game losing streak to close the season, whether they beat Pittsburgh this Sunday or not, you know, I don't think that's going to matter a whole lot, barring a very unforeseen sequence of events that gets them in the playoffs and, you know, they make some kind of miracle run. I'm not holding my breath for any of that. So assuming that doesn't happen, when you do have this kind of losing streak, yeah, so much of it's injury, so much of it has been attrition, COVID, go down the list, certain things that they couldn't control. So that's why you don't overreact, but you also don't want to be, you know, I don't know what the best term would be in terms of
I would call it dismissive of what's happened here, because it's not good enough. It's below the bar. It's all that losing 5 games in a row. But I don't know that there's any answer that John Harbaugh has, even in a Zoom setting, to say, we've lost 30 of our players around here. Like, you know, I can only be so disappointed. I can only be so angry. I can't be heads need to roll here. But I do think when you come out of the post with a bunch of 30-somethings and then you start losing guys, they had a lot of 30-something on this team. They did. They were as Bill Belichick teams that won did, right? Like, you think we are going to be a January team and I want to have as many warm hands on deck bodies, as many Justin Houstons and Calais Campbells and Kevin Zeitlers and Alejandro Villanueva. I mean, I'm just going through the list of guys, right? Yeah. And not to mention the Josh Bynes that have come in here as a part of the attrition, right? But there is a part of that when you become that team and you're counting on your 20-something quarterback who isn't there anymore and your 20-something running backs who aren't there and Marcus Peters in his prime who's not there and Marlon Humphrey's not there and Ronnie Stanley's not there. I mean, this book sort of writes itself. I just wrote it in the last minute and a half. Anybody missed the season and they came back to heard the last minute and a half that none of these guys have played, you'd know why they're 8-8.
Yeah. And part of what I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com is as I kind of focused and used the second and goal from the 2, kind of saying, hey, it's another elusive 2 yards they couldn't get. You know, it wasn't a 2-point conversion this time. But part of what I wrote was the hard truth is this was always going to be the very likely outcome, whether it's week 17, whether it's week 18, whether it's the first or second round of the playoffs. When you look at this kind of attrition, when you look at the sheer number of key players, whether you're talking about guys you lost back in late August or early September, or you're talking about guys you lost in December, like Marlon Humphrey and Lamar Jackson, who has missed 3 straight games and, you know, whether he plays in the finale or not. I mean, you know, it kind of feels almost inconsequential. It's not officially, but the point is you lose that many guys. You have that kind of unrelenting attrition with your football team, with your roster, knowing that there is a salary cap, knowing that you lost some of your highest paid players when you kind of look at how their cap was structured this year. You do get to a point where you just say, you're not going to overcome all that. I mean, you're just not. Now, does that mean that makes, to your point, does that mean it makes a 5-game losing streak acceptable and you're dismissive or you're complacent going into next year saying, oh, we're fine. You know, we're not going to have that many No, you don't want to react that way. And part of that is going to be making those difficult decisions because, Nestor, as you mentioned, some of those 30-somethings, some of those guys, even dare I say a lot of those guys, still played pretty well. You know, we can point to an Alejandro Villanueva and say, all right, probably not the kind of signing that ended up being a net positive. Yes, he played left tackle. Did he play it at a particularly high level? No, not really. So you kind of point to that and say, well, they traded Orlando Brown. He was the replacement. Ronnie Stanley wasn't healthy. So you can look at that. Or you could look at a Calais Campbell, who, some late season injuries aside, played very well. But at the same time, are you going to hedge your bets and say it's time to get younger there? Are you going to bring him back, you know, for another season? You know, it's that whole, do you get rid of the guy a year too early? Do you run that risk with that? Or do you bring him back and maybe it's a year too late and maybe he's not the same guy? Brandon Williams is another example of that, who's going to be a free agent. So they have lots of difficult decisions. Hey, all is not lost. I don't think this team is in a dire position going into the offseason by any means, but they have a lot of interesting decisions to make. And all of that's going to be, you know, kind of overshadowed by what happens with your quarterback contract situation. You know, do you sign Lamar Jackson this spring? Or, based on everything that's happened, based on how he struggled even before getting hurt, based on how this Greg Roman offense in general short-circuited.
I don't give him money. I'll say that right now. I'm on record. I'm on record right now as saying you can't give him $200 million right now. You shouldn't give him $200 million right now, right this minute.
Well, and I assume, and you can speak for yourself in a moment, you're saying you don't do that right now in the spring. Let it play out another year. There's the franchise tag. There, you know, I mean, look at what Dallas did with Dak Prescott. I mean, Dak Prescott broke his leg and he still got paid. So, you know, if you're Lamar Jackson, you know, the fifth year option, I think is $23 million guaranteed. So he's certainly going to get some long-term financial security. Now, it's not $300 million or whatever it's going to ultimately end up being, or $400, whatever. But that right there is a decision you need to make. And you know, you have a free agent center. You have some other positions. I just mentioned the defensive line that, to me, feels like it's going to have to be rebuilt just out of, you know, sheer age and contractual purposes. So, you know, they have a lot of decisions to make. At the same time, you do have a lot of dynamic, really good football players that should be coming back from injury. And, you know, I think another one that is going to be big is, what does Ronnie Stanley look like? And I think that's a position where they're going to have to, I think they're going to have to play that one somewhere in the middle. I think you're going to have to look to draft a tackle that you hope maybe will be their right tackle. And maybe Patrick McCary can kind of slide back into a little more of a utility role. Who knows? If Bradley Bozeman leaves, Patrick McCary might be their center next year. Who knows? I mean, there are a lot of moving parts here, but can you just play it out in the sense that you assume Ronnie Stanley's going to be pre-injury Ronnie Stanley? Well, contractually, there's really not anything you can do. You know, that contract isn't even tradable, even if someone had the full confidence that Ronnie Stanley was going to be the same guy, and you can't move on from him at this point. The cap hit would be astronomical. So really, that's one, you know, not terribly different from where they were with, say, Dennis Pitta 5-6 years ago, where it was just a case of, you have to hope for the best. The contract you're stuck with right now, so you hope for the best. But I also think that's a position where I look at all their options at left or right tackle, either a question about health or a question about performance. That's why I think, not necessarily the first round, but I do think offensive tackle is a position they still need to look at in terms of not just a short-term, but a long-term play if Ronnie Stanley isn't anywhere close to the same guy and you're needing a left tackle. So those are all the decisions they need to make. And really, that's, you know, they're not in that mode just yet, because they do have a 2% chance, but they're really in a position right now where, barring a coin flip landing heads 5 or 6 times in a row, which is kind of where they are right now, probability wise, you know, the eyes are towards next year and the off season and trying to figure this all out, because again, you can't panic. I don't think they should panic, but at the same time, if you only chalk it up to injuries, it's what you said, you're being a little too dismissive, and there's a danger there to not growing as a football team in the process.
Well, there's the other part where they were in every game. They won 2 yards on Sunday. and they're alive. You talk about all of these two-point conversions that Harbaugh made, these decisions that he has to live with. And again, I don't think that Steve Bisciotti is even awake to what's going on with the franchise at this point to think that he's going to fire a coach or replace anyone or do anything in the football department. I get no vibe that Steve Bisciotti would ever want to do that and wants to do that again during his ownership. So this is about feeling we were close, we did okay, we brought subs in, we brought guys in off the street, we played with Kevon Seymour, we played with all these guys. The Willie Gaston of this year for you, 14 years later, I guess. It's crazy that it's been 14 years since I said it pissed butt with that guy. But I would say for their judging themselves against the league, they would look at this and say, we almost won a couple of these games with third string guys. Like literally, they had Josh Johnson in and gave them a chance to win for a little while.
Yeah, and that's why I said you need to react without overreacting. You know, you don't want to you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater, right? They weren't good enough, and there are things that they need to address. But at the same time, you don't want to completely lose your mind over it and say, oh, we lost five in a row. We need to make this change and that change. We need to fire this guy and fire that guy. And look, that's not to say that some changes here and there aren't warranted. And you know, one thing that I think is frustrating for me in looking at this is, you know, where are they with Greg Roman right now? And let's be clear, I'm not suggesting firing Greg Roman. At the same time, what was the big question of the offseason? The passing game and what they looked like at wide receiver and all these different things, what Lamar was going to look like. And, you know, if you judge that based off how the first five or six games went, you feel really good about that, especially considering all the time that was missed in the summer. Lamar with COVID and Rashad Bateman missing most of training camp. Marquise Brown missed all of training camp except a day or two. Sammy Watkins missed time, you know, although I wouldn't expect Watkins to be back. But you know, you kind of, Ronnie Stanley wasn't out there. Kevin Zeitler missed time. I mean, and they did very well with their passing game early on in the season, but that went away. I mean, even before you start talking about losing Lamar Jackson and other guys they lost along the way. So,
but the offensive line was a mess the first month of the season. And when I think about what they were trying to do and running the ball, the running backs weren't there. Yeah. I mean, I'm not playing defense of John or defense of the organization, or even defense of Greg Roman. But everything that this team drew up, it didn't happen. You know what I mean? What did happen is they were 8-3, and they were good enough to get there. So, you know, you want to piss on them for losing the last five games. Praise them for getting to 8-3 to some degree with lots and lots and lots of issues that made them appear to be more vibrant than they were. You and I would sit here after they would win these games and we'd say, how are they doing this? They're not that good. They don't feel that good. And then 5 weeks later, they haven't won in a month and a half. And we're like, well, maybe they weren't that good. Their backups weren't that good.
Yeah, yeah, and that's fair. And to be clear, again, I said at the very beginning, I wouldn't fire Greg Roman. You know, I'm not saying that, but at the same time, is this passing game moving in the right direction?
If they fired Greg Roman, can you imagine what he would say to his wife? Hold on. I lost both my quarterbacks. I lost all my running backs.
Right.
They gave away my right tackle to Kansas City and brought in this guy from Pittsburgh that I had to use as a left tackle. And I just on and on. Boyle, Ricard, the injuries, blocking, just blocking. I mean, the whole offense is set up to have a hat on a hat blocking and then have a quarterback that's faster than anyone else who can distribute the ball and running backs that are credible, not 30-something guys off the street, which is what these guys were. I don't know if those guys would have played in the league had the Ravens not picked them up, right?
Yeah,
who was going to pick Latavius Murray up and run around? I mean, seriously. I mean, these guys were on the street for a reason. They were unemployed.
Well, keep in mind financial reasons for veteran guys. I think those guys would have played somewhere. Now, would Devontae Freeman have had the same prominent role where he was basically their starting running back after what? I mean, Murray was early in the year, hurts his ankle in the Cincinnati game, I think it was, or you know, San Diego, or not San Diego, Chargers game. Right around there, and then Freeman took over from there. But no, I hear what you're saying, and again, I'm not disagreeing there. At the same time, I think it is concerning that you really didn't find a lot of the answers that you had questions for as it pertained to the passing game. And you know, you can point to the offensive line. As great as Ronnie Stanley is, if you lose one guy on your offensive line, does that mean your offensive line just gets a pass? I don't think it should. That's why I said they need to get better at tackle. I think that's obvious. You know, I feel okay about the options they have to figure out guard. You know, I mean, Zeitler certainly played at a high level. Left guard, I mean, Ben Cleveland at the end of the year has been in there. I don't know if he's always played as well as fan perception has been, but, you know, between him, Powers, Tyree Phillips, okay. You know, I can sign off on that, but, you know, the options you're talking about at offensive tackle, okay, yeah, Ronnie Stanley, if he's healthy, is going to be the left tackle. That's obvious. But what's the right tackle position look like? What's their backup look like? I mean, that's really what we're talking about here, and you just mentioned it. I mean, their depth at some of these positions just wasn't good enough to begin with, and then when you throw in a couple injuries, that's when it, you know, it becomes dire. So, you know, but my point is, and again, you know, talking about Greg Roman, talking about Lamar Jackson, talking about this passing game in general, you know, I there was clearly a major focus in making that go. And to your point, despite everything that worked against them early in the season, their passing game was really good through the first 4, 5, 6 weeks of the season.
Mark Andrews set records, so you could say that, right?
Well, Todd Heap also had Pro Bowl seasons when their passing game wasn't functional. So, you know, I think it's got to be careful not just pointing to one individual. But, you know, that went away. And that went away even before Lamar Jackson got hurt. And, you know, that went away even as Rashad Bateman was coming back into the picture. So, you know, there is that sense of questioning whether they are still moving in the right direction with their passing game, with Greg Roman being their offensive coordinator. And again, I'm posing that question. If you're asking me, no, I don't fire Greg Roman. And I think that would be an overreaction based on all the injuries and challenges that we've talked about here over the last few minutes. But that's one of the many questions that I kind of point to and kind of leaves you in that uncomfortable space in this offseason and saying, okay, 8-8, you know, whether they're finished 9-8 or 8-9, whatever happens against the Steelers on Sunday. But, you know, how much of it's injuries? How much of it is COVID? How much of it is bad luck? You know, you mentioned some of these very close losses, although they had plenty of close wins early in the season. So, you know, you can't just point out the losses without the wins. But, you know, there are some questions that kind of put you in that position of how poised are they? How primed are they to really take that next step? Because obviously, because of those injuries, because of the attrition, they didn't take that next step. They took 2 steps back down the stretch, or however many steps you want to call it. So, you know, it wasn't good enough. And ultimately, that's what we judged this on. So it is going to be a case of what exactly do you chalk up to returning to a more normal level of injuries, returning to hopefully less of a COVID situation than we saw this year late in the season, and how much of it is, yeah, we need to tweak this. We need to fix that. We need to go get this guy. And that's what Eric DaCosta and his staff, that's why they're paid the big bucks to make those decisions here. It'll be interesting as we get into the offseason following Sunday, barring a no major miracle in week 18.
Moments away from baseball season beginning here in Baltimore. Luke Jones joins us now. You can find him, Baltimore Luke. He'll be out in Owings Mills all week long getting you ready for Steelers week and the grand finale of the 2021 season, now that we're into 22. You can find me anywhere the internet is served: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, all over. We're doing the recon with Don Mueller this week, and we wish we were talking playoff football this week, but we might have some New Year stuff around here as well. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Royal Farms Coffee and Baltimore Positive.